Welcome to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1, and it's really gut check time around here.
We got to lay it all on the line right now.
Lay it all on the line. Give 110%.
The pressure is on.
The pressure is on. I don't know. I feel like we really just talk a good game, but you know, I just want to give it my all.
Well, I mean,
and good Lord willing, it'll all work out.
This one's for all the marbles.
What does that even mean? I just really hope we can knock it out of the park today.
Well, if you focus, then you've got a chance.
I would agree with that. Although I can't use that whole quote. I can't use the beginning of it because there's a series of colorful language at the beginning.
This is Bull Durham?
Yes.
Teach me something new, man. I need to learn. Teach me something. Well, you got something to write with? Good. It's time to work on your interviews.
My interviews? What do I got to do?
You're going to have to learn your cliches. You're going to have to study them. You're going to have to know them. They're your friends. Write this down. We got to play them one day at a time.
Got to play. It's pretty boring.
Of course it's boring. That's the point. Write it down.
One day at a time.
All right. I'm just happy to be here. Hope I can help the ball club. I know. Write it down. I just want to give it my best shot, and the good Lord willing, things will work out.
Good Lord willing,
things will work out. Yep.
So that was from Bull Durham, which you and I both watched today. We didn't watch it together. I think that would actually be probably a more entertaining show, and we're going to have to kick up the levels on that, but that's another story. So Bull Durham is, I have a hard time saying anything other than it's the perfect sports movie.
It has so many elements that come together so well. As far as sports movies go, it's a slam dunk.
It is a slam dunk. And you also get, it has an interesting piece of self-awareness because you get Crash Davis saying, well, I believe in the sea. What do you believe in? I believe in the C, the P, the small of a woman's back, hanging curveball, high fiver, good scotch. Believe that novels of Susan Sontag are self-indulgent, overrated crap. I believe there ought to be a constitutional amendment outlawing AstroTurf from the designated hitter. I believe in the sweet spot, soft core, P. And I believe in long, slow, deep, soft, wet kisses that last for 3 days. He does that and gives this great speech, and it's like this mic drop, and he just walks out of the room. And then not 10 minutes later, he's in the movie hitting in the batting cage, and he starts lecturing Annie. And the next thing you see is her saying, oh, Crash, you do make speeches. Like, this character is designed to make speeches, and she calls him out on it. Like, that's who he is.
You should drop the mic and leave the room.
Why?
Well, you just quoted that without any notes, and
I memorized it in college. And the other thing about it at that point was, yeah, I memorized it in college, but, that was the point in time when I had room in my brain for, I used to know all the Heisman Trophy winners dating back to 1936. Like that was, okay, let me see what I can remember. Like that was then. So I had to drive up to Bowen back. So while I was in the car, I went over it and edited with the C and the P and the P.
You could have been Kevin Costner.
No. He's much better looking. The other thing that I didn't realize until we were looking up the cliches was Mark Canna, who plays for the Oakland A's, first baseman, went as far in his major league debut. He had a couple base hits and everybody's around his locker interviewing him. And what does he do? He quotes the Nuke LaLoosh interview verbatim as, just here to give 110%. Good Lord willing, it'll all work out. Just want to help the ball club, baseball players. But this is, if you are a professional athlete, this is your safe place.
That's right. That's right.
It is better to be, maybe, it is better to be excoriated for being vanilla than it is for crossing the line and saying something that might be bulletin. Oh, there's another cliche, bulletin board material.
Well, it's interesting that in the Oakland A's player went with Nuke's press conference, so to speak, when he made it to the bigs. He didn't go with the quotes he gave au naturel after his first win.
Right.
Which were a lot different.
Oh, those were better.
It feels out there. It's a major rush. It doesn't just feel out there. It feels out there. Kind of radical in a in a tubular way.
The quotes that came, yes, that was way better. And you look at things that got into that movie that then became part of the vernacular. Calling rookies meat, I think, has always been there. Hit the bull or throw it at the bull. and the fact that he throws his fastball at the bull and the bull goes down like a sack of potatoes.
Right.
You know, having been in a mascot suit, yeah, I can tell you it wouldn't feel all that good to get hit with a fastball in the mascot suit. I guess that's why you don't have your mascot down on the field. But the professional athletes, you had Marcus Smart, who is, I remember back at Oklahoma State, he was known as kind of a hothead, had gotten himself in trouble for a couple of different things, saying things, doing things on the court. He has kept it between the navigational beacons as a Celtic. I had forgotten until ESPN mentioned it the other day. He was the sixth pick overall. But he is one who is bound and determined he's going to stay out of the papers.
Well, you know, it's just the way that he plays, it's almost like he epitomizes the cliches.
He,
you know, go get the loose balls. You know, hustle wins championships. Defense wins championships. He just does all the little things.
Yeah, and there's just one.
that's his.
I need a ding.
That's his DNA. It's
ding.
He doesn't have to speak it. He just does it on
ding.
The court.
Yes, I'm gonna ding you every time you use a cliche. So, they are playing well. And yeah, when you get a guy who's like that, who kind of, it's the Bill Laimbeer without being the Bill Laimbeer back in the old days, but he gets under everybody's skin. Which is his job. And that's the beauty of it.
Well, and the way that he's playing with epitomizing those cliches leads me to the stat of the week.
Go.
In the game one with the Celtics Cavaliers, 50-50 balls, Boston got 24, Cleveland 17. Deflections, Boston 28, Cleveland 18. Box outs. The Celtics had 29 more box outs than Cleveland, 93-64. So they are literally doing all the little things in the hustle plays, and Marcus Smart's right at the center of that.
Is there a chance we could get this kind of advanced analytics in our BMBL playoff?
We should have it.
We should.
I mean,
so if anybody wants to volunteer, I'm sure you can get community service hours for it. Come and chart in the Bedford Men's Basketball League, because we'd really like to see. Is a box out, regardless of whether it's successful or results in a rebound?
Yeah, I think it's...
It just is a player establishing position.
Right. Are you going in and finding the man like you should? What would really be great is if we had the NBA analytics based on the cameras. So we'd have to install the cameras in our gyms all throughout town to figure out, okay, how many dribbles per game? How long are you holding the ball? How many passes do you make? How fast do you run? Did you see the stat in the... in the Houston Golden State series about dribbles in game one?
No.
James Harden dribbled the ball 550 times in game one.
Yeah.
Do you know who dribbled the ball 549 times?
Who?
Curry, Durant, and...
combined,
Green,
among them.
Green.
Among them.
All three of them combined.
Okay. So what they're saying is that Golden State is more effectively moving the ball.
And they were in game one. Game two, right. It was a different story. I never heard how many times he dribbled the ball, but they looked a lot different last night.
Is there a computer that counts that, or is there a human being going, yep, dribble?
No, it's
dribble,
cameras.
Dribble, dribble, dribble. So it's AI.
Yes.
Not Allen Iverson.
Not Allen Iverson.
Practice.
We're talking about practice?
Not a game.
This is playoffs.
Yeah. Playoffs? Yeah. Again, have those become cliche?
What?
The fact that I can't hear the word practice without saying, we're talking about practice?
Well, hey.
Not a game.
Well, that's what's funny, is that's when you get a star player who doesn't use a cliche in an interview.
I loved him.
It's subject to becoming a phrase that we can't forget, that we always use.
It's funny to me, too.
Because you hear thousands.
I mean, it's strange to me, too.
You hear thousands of interviews every year, and so many of them follow the Kevin Costner script. that when you get an Allen Iverson out of left field ding, then you never forget it.
I want to go back because we're going to hop off this topic in about 3 minutes. I'm going to go back to a couple more Bull Durham things. More cliches. You throw the ball, you hit the ball, you catch the ball. This is a simple game. You throw the ball, you hit the ball, you catch the ball. I love the last line in the interview from Nuke. Sometimes you win, sometimes you lose, sometimes it rains. Think about that for a while. I mean, it's completely accurate.
And it makes you think a little bit.
It makes you think, and then you go, yeah, it is what it is. That another one did.
Sometimes you turn on the faucets and you flood the field so that you make your own rain day.
You could never do that.
Rain out. Yeah.
There'd be a security camera.
Too much security.
Or you set off an alarm. Like, eh. Nuke LaLoosh is excited about a strikeout, and he says he's gloating about it, and Costner says, in the show, they would have ripped you. And he says, can't you just let me enjoy the moment? Moment's over.
You got to turn the page, Lawrence.
You have to turn the page. I don't know. There's a lot that is in there. And, of course, it was written by the same guy who wrote Tin Cup, Ron Shelton, who had minor league baseball experience. And just so many subtexts, and the fact that movie has just aged spectacularly well. If you have Prime, you can just download it anytime, or you can be like Hanson and DVR it. The biggest problem I have is I would really like to sit down and watch it with Maggie.
Mm-hmm.
And because the baseball scenes, to me, particularly the scenes where Crash is out at the mound talking to Nuke, or the scenes where Crash is at bat talking to himself and saying, bring me the heat, you're really going to throw me that. That's valuable for a human being who's playing baseball to see that.
It really is. It's a great insight into the mental side of baseball, hitting and pitching. And you see Nuke out there on the mound, and his mind's going crazy, and he's saying to himself, well, I know I want to throw the fastball right now. And why is he telling me to throw the curveball?
Why is he telling me to throw the curve? But then, I'm the one who drives a Porsche.
Right. But then he says to himself, you know, he puts his faith in the veteran, and he's, all right, I'm going to take his advice. And then when he does that and he stops worrying about anything, he just focuses on, oh, he put down the one. Okay, I'm going to throw the fastball. And he gets automatic with it. His performance is much better.
I still remember the best game I ever pitched out in a men's league out in California. I gave up 2 hits in 9 innings. And the reason, I shook off my catcher twice.
So,
like, it was just, okay, if you say it, I'm going to do it.
So you had it. When you had the two-hit shutout running, you didn't shake off the pitcher and then and then hang a curveball, yeah, and the batter knew it was coming, and then your shutout went out the window?
Hit the bully. Got a free steak. You told me to hold it like an egg.
Yeah,
and he just scrambled it. Yes. So, yeah, if you haven't watched that in a while, go back and watch it. It's, I don't know that it could be. And they're all, the only kind of wart on the movie to me is Tim Robbins is the pitcher. I don't think he's athletic enough.
Right.
But he fits. I don't think anybody would have played it better than Kevin Costner.
No. He was money.
Yeah. So, cliches. The other thing that's kind of fun about cliches is you can add them to your business world. We got to cover all our bases. Touch base at the end of the day. Put a bow on it. Like, there's so many sports cliches. We're just trying to move the ball forward. We're trying to get it across the goal line. They all apply to work. And you hear people that have never played football or baseball use them. So
there's no I in team.
There's no I in team, but there is. Yeah. Yeah. There is no I in team. I don't know. I don't really know what to say about that. I never really liked that one.
Well,
are you? Yeah,
it's true.
It is. Yes. It's just the spelling. Really? I don't know. Anyway, we have a guest coming up right after this, Bob Luby from the Bedford Boys tennis program at the high school. So we'll take a quick break. Come right back. You're listening to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Back here on Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1, Lauren Fox and Andrew Hanson. It occurs to me that we might not have introduced ourselves in the first segment.
We did not.
That's okay.
Here we are now.
You're here 15 minutes in. We have Bob Luby, who's the assistant coach of the Bedford High School boys tennis program. And am I correct in my stat? Was it 111 straight until yesterday?
Yes.
Oh, my God. All right. Now I feel like a jinx now. So rough one yesterday. The boys are now 148-2 since 2010.
Yes.
Yesterday was only the second loss. Snapped 111 match win streak. So I'm going to tackle the hardest one first. Last night you ran up against a tough Pinkerton team. And that's the end of the regular season. How do you build on a loss at the end of the regular season heading into the state tournament?
Well, I think what we have to do, I'm the assistant coach and Shauna Morley is the head coach. But I think what we would do is we look and see maybe where we had some problems yesterday and see if we can adjust them in the few practice sessions we have until the playoffs begin, which are next Tuesday, incidentally, so we don't have much time. Just because we lost one match doesn't mean we lose out. It's the New Hampshire Athletic Association, as I'm sure you know, takes the top eight teams in each division.
Right.
And we have team playoffs, and then we have double playoffs and a single, match.
Right. It's nice to be able to get in. And, of course, where you guys were going into the postseason gives you ample opportunity. And the other really nice thing is you don't have much time to think about it, because the worst thing is to have time to ruminate on this sort of stuff. The program has a tradition of excellence, eight straight championships at the high school level on the boys' side. When the players at Bedford High head into the tennis season or put on the Bulldog logo, what expectations do they have for themselves as well as the program?
Well, you know, we want the kids, first of all, Shauna and I both believe the academic side of things is the most important aspect in their life in high school. And tennis is, you know, it's a sport. It's not something that many of them, or if any of them, are ever going to play professional tennis. Bedford has produced some professional athletes, and we've had a few try professional tennis. But, you know, their success is going to come from the high school. It's not going to come from the tennis courts. It certainly helps. I think both of us believe very strongly that it builds character. It gives these kids a sense of working with others and working hard and, you know, practicing hard. These kids practice 6 days a week, about 2 hours per day. So it's quite a commitment for, you know, basically 3 months that they have to make towards the sport. And some will play their best tennis in high school. Some will play their best tennis in college. And many of them will play this sport for the rest of their life, because it is a lifelong sport. And I've had people in tennis clinics that, believe it or not, are in their 90s.
That's so awesome.
People stay with the sport for a long time. It's not just, I don't want to say anything about other sports, but some of the sports in high school, you play in high school, after you graduate, that's kind of it. In tennis, it's something that you can actually play for the rest of your life. So it's important for those of us that teach tennis to instruct them into the proper mechanics and the way you swing to or do anything to reduce or eliminate injury. Because you can, again, like any sport, you can pick up injuries that are long-lasting. They don't go away overnight. So it's important to, you know, show these people the correct way to do things and make sure that they're doing it that way. And I think that any successful program does that. Any successful program that I've ever dealt with, I think, does that. And we work very hard at trying to achieve it.
Coach, you've done a wonderful job with the program over the last almost decade with building that program and getting these amazing results. When I look at your record, I think about the UConn women's basketball program, which, you know, they've got this great coach in Gino Auriemma, but they also tend to attract the best players, and it's the perfect combination for that team to be undefeated or near undefeated every year and compete for championships. And it seems like you guys have the same thing going with the boys' tennis program, the combination of stability with coaching and you know, you're obviously focusing on the right mechanics, the proper mechanics to help the players succeed. But what is it about the players at Bedford that has allowed the program to have this sustained excellence, you know, on the court? Is it a certain style of play, or what's been the secret for such great performance?
Well, I don't think it's a style of play. You know, you mentioned UConn. We have had a player go to UConn who was successful, and we have another one that probably will be going there shortly. So you're right about UConn. They want the best players, and we'll accommodate them if they let us. So what is it about the Bedford kids? I don't know. We try to, again, teach them the mechanics of the game, how to play the game, how to enjoy the game. And Bedford, as you probably know, is a very competitive town, a town that's done well in all types of sports. And over the last 10 years, we've had very good success with tennis. I think part of the success is due to the Lurgio program, whose head coach is Mauricio, and his staff, who take the kids that are basically in the 7th and 8th grade, and they learn the basics of the game. They learn what everything is called in the game, and they get into various tennis drills and practice programs that allow them to go to the next level, which in their case would be high school. As an example, we have two of the starters that started yesterday came out of the Lurgio program last year. So we have several of those players. It's more of an instructional program as compared to playing a lot of matches. There's not very many teams, middle school teams around, so the best competition for those kids are their peers. That's what it works out to be. But these people, you know, to show you the dedication, they practice. Mauricio has them out there before 7 o'clock in the morning, and they practice up until 8:30, and then they walk up and go to school.
Wow!
So that gives them a good basis for the program. It doesn't mean that kids that don't participate in that don't have a shot at high school tennis, but the Lurgio program under Mauricio, I think, gives them a pretty good head start.
That's certainly helpful. We're with Bob Luby, who's the assistant coach for the Bedford boys tennis team at the high school. And heading into the state tournament, for casual fans who might not have followed the team, what are some names they should be on the lookout for?
there were so many names, but certainly two of the our top players that have grabbed a lot of media attention. Ro Yerm, the fellow that is going to be going to UConn, who plays number one, and Jason Butcher, who plays number two, both very, very good tennis players, and it would be difficult. I do a lot of ranking of players and everything else, but both of these kids have exceptional tennis skills and are fun to watch. They're exciting.
It's impressive too that that they're able to get looked at by some of the bigger programs as well. It's a great opportunity for them to continue on because, as you mentioned, this is a sport that in a lot of cases you have the opportunity to play it when you're younger, and it's the kind of thing you said you've been at clinics with players in their 90s who can still play. It keeps you healthy and it keeps you young. What advice would you give somebody who wants to play and realizes that 5 months of the year the court either the courts are going to be covered in snow or it's just going to be super cold?
I know that, and that makes it difficult. I spend a portion of my year in Florida basically doing exactly what I do here, but they don't have that problem. It's very difficult because the courts, I think you're right, on about 5 months of the year is what you can expect out of the municipal courts. There are a variety of indoor courts around here, and I think two of the biggest ones are the YMCA in Goffstown and Executive. They're both clubs fairly local. But I do want to emphasize the fact that, you know, you don't have to play this sport 12 months of the year to be successful at it. We had one kid that graduated a year or two ago. He, in his 4 years of high school, he had played on 12 state championship teams in Bedford. Four of them were the tennis team, but he was an excellent golfer and also a skier. So I don't think it's necessary to play this sport every single day. Some do. I'm out on the courts every day, but I don't think it's that necessary for a kid to have to go to that extent to be successful. Unfortunately, when it comes to college, the NCAA has a lot of requirements and limitations, and for instance, Division III schools cannot give out athletic scholarships, which limits, the help that these kids can get, because school now is so expensive, you need some type of help to go through. Division II schools have only a limited amount of scholarships that they can give out, or partial scholarships, and there are very few Division II schools in the New England or East. There's very, very few of them. And that leaves you with Division I. And again, some Division I tennis programs have been terminated to accommodate Article 9. And that creates a little bit more of a difficulty. But there are still some very, very good tennis schools in this area. Unfortunately, many of them cannot give out athletic scholarships. For instance, the Ivy League and a few other schools that chose to go in that direction do not provide for athletic scholarships. But there's many, many other schools, Northeastern, BUBC, Bryant. We have a kid at Bryant. UConn. There's many, many other Division One schools that do have college tennis programs. And so kids can get that type of help if they're very good and if they're looking for it. Unfortunately, in Division One tennis, it opens up the area, the possibilities for anybody in the world, actually, to apply for the limited scholarships that they have. And the scholarships are determined by the NCAA. They're not something that the school can provide an unlimited number of them. So it's a well-controlled area that supposedly makes the playing field even. But there are some very, very good programs. As I said, Dartmouth, I'm familiar with the Harvard program, but Brown, there's all types of tennis programs in the East, and some of the Ivy League schools, or most of the Ivy League schools, I know Harvard fits into this category. If a kid can't afford to go there, they will pay for, you know, depending on the finances of the family. So they make these programs available, and they have beautiful facilities and programs that attract a wide variety of kids.
Well, it's certainly a great opportunity that the youth of this town have, starting at the younger age levels, to participate in some of these programs, and then through junior high as well as into high school and beyond. And a lot of it, of course, is due to the program that you, Coach Luby, and Coach Morley have put together at the high school level. So we thank you for that, and we also thank you for the time, and good luck in the state tournament starting next Tuesday.
Okay. Thank you, and I'll pass that on to Shauna.
You got it. Thank you, Coach.
Good luck, Coach.
Bye-bye.
That was Coach Bob Luby, the assistant at Bedford High School. And we will be back after this. You're listening to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Welcome back to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Lauren Fox and Andrew Hansen. And it's always fun when we get to interview high school athletes, get a different perspective on what they're seeing on the field as opposed to what we're seeing, either behind the backstop or in the stands or what have you. And today we have Ryan Toscano, who, if you are an avid listener of Fox on Sports, you might remember the name. We had Corey Parker on talking about the Athletic Leadership Conference that took place at Mount Washington a couple months back, and Ryan was fortunate to go to that. So, and Ryan is a multi-sport athlete as well, in the thick of lacrosse season right now. So, Ryan, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks so much for having me today.
It's our pleasure. So, obviously, you're busy. Academics are a priority, and knowing your dad, that's no surprise. Up until this year, you've been a three-sport athlete and somehow balanced all three sports with great academics. How do you do it?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes it definitely is very challenging with all the sports and the academics coming together. But for me, I've always just put academics at the top of my list, along with my family. Obviously, academics are very important to be eligible for the actual sports. And I think that the actual hard work in the classroom for many student-athletes is very important, because I think that hard work in the classroom definitely translates, especially to that hard work on the field. And that hard work on the field and the classroom definitely pays off with the dividends of resulting in a very, very successful time on the field. So, and definitely, I'd say the most important part of that is time management.
Yep.
With us, we have like 8 hours of school each day. We have about 2 hours of practice. And sometimes it's hard with some kids when they want to, for example, go out to eat after practice or maybe hang out. It's tough to say no to that, because obviously you have homework as a priority. And it is definitely sometimes tough, but it's very important to keep the grades up and stay in contact with that work and be very successful in the classroom. So it definitely is tough sometimes, but it's very important to get that work done.
I'm sure it's tough. The call of, hey, do you want to go grab pizza and hang out, oftentimes sounds way better than, yeah, I'm just going to go back and do homework, but it's what you need to do. What went into the decision for you? You're a two-sport athlete now, football and lacrosse, to give up basketball this year. It's a great program at the high school, so I'm sure it had to be a challenging one.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, I have a lot of family history with basketball. Both my brothers play it. My older brother, he's in college now. He plays club there. My little brother's on the Lurgio middle school team. My dad played college basketball at Stonehill. My grandpa had a great career in high school at basketball and set some records in New York. So it was definitely tough. I've grown up around the game all my life. I played ever since I was young. But it got to that point where narrowing it down to definitely lacrosse and football, looking to play, and maybe get the opportunity to play one of those in college. It was definitely important to hit the weight room, maybe training a little bit faster for the upcoming seasons. And I noticed that with my freshman and sophomore years, it was very tough to get ample time in the weight room to get stronger and faster for those other two seasons. So it was definitely a hard decision to give it up. But this year I got plenty of time to work with my trainer and work with the kids in the weight room, get bigger, faster, stronger for potentially the next level of sports, which would be college. So it was definitely a tough decision, but it was one that definitely paid off.
So we are here with Ryan Toscano, Bedford High student athlete. And for you, lacrosse is an in-season sport, or at least it has been to this point, not a year-round commitment. How hard is it to keep up with the kids that are playing lacrosse year-round, travel teams, tournaments, you name it, when you're playing for a smaller, shorter window of the season?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely is tough sometimes because lacrosse is one of the sports where you can almost play all year round if you don't play any sports. There's indoor club, there's fall club, there's summer club, and obviously the high school season during the spring. So obviously with sports like football, there's only really one season you can play, and you train all year round to just participate in that one season. Whereas basketball as well, there's winter AAU, spring AAU, fall AAU, and then the actual season in the winter. So it's definitely been tough, but giving up that basketball season definitely helped me get the stick in my hand this year. And just all the hard work in the actual season during practice, maybe staying after practice a little bit to shoot around with my friends or just get some stick work in, definitely helps. And I think that the actual other sports with football and basketball definitely helped me in season because they give me a different perspective on how to play the game, like basketball, the defense greatly relates to how lacrosse defense is played, and the physicality of football definitely translates to the lacrosse game. So those other sports and just working hard in season definitely helps me a lot to be successful during the spring season of lacrosse.
So, you know, referencing that spring season, Ryan, that you're in now, the lacrosse team has now won three in a row, and we're taping this on Thursday, and you're scheduled to play undefeated BG today. So after the three-game winning streak, how ready do you think the team is to take on BG and then peak for the playoffs?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a big part of our season. Like today, I've been thinking about it all day. They're a little anxious to get out there tonight. It's their senior night. They're a great team, coached by Coach Cameron. Coach Cameron's been my youth coach ever since up until eighth grade. So about 4 or 5 years I've had him. I've played with his two sons, Brian and Sean, who are both very outstanding players. And they have a lot of depth, too, on their team. And they have a bunch of All-Americans. A lot of kids going to play college lacrosse. So it's definitely going to be a great night. Historically, us two teams, Bedford and BG, are a big rivalry when it comes to the spring game, along with Pinkerton, too. So we're going to come out with a lot of energy tonight. They're undefeated. I think they beat Duxbury last night, so that was a huge win for them. So we're just going to come out with a lot of energy and confidence coming off our three-game win streak. But I bet that will definitely help us coming into the playoffs, seeing what we need to match and match the intensity for the playoff season.
It's fun to hear you talk about, too, because, of course, Chris Cameron is a Bedford guy who has – a pretty amazing lacrosse resume himself, but of course now is down at BG. So you kind of forget about how we all kind of, you see each other, whether it's club teams that wind up getting back together or kids that you played with who wind up going in another school. but you're matching up against these teams that are rivals, but in a lot of ways, you guys are old friends.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's one of the experiences that I took away from the leadership conference that I just attended a few months ago, just to see these kids and an opportunity, just not on the field and as student athletes and as friends. It definitely makes it more fun and more competitive because you know these kids, they're very good friends. You know how they act, and it's just great to play against them on the field and just have a fun time with them.
It's awesome. So we are here with Ryan Toscano, Bedford High student athlete, lacrosse as of this second, and there tend to be trends in sports. Years ago, it was the well-rounded athlete. Bo Jackson, Deion Sanders are the ones that come to mind, and I realize I'm talking ancient history to you now. But then, those were the days, man. Then more coaches started preaching specialization, and it became almost this epidemic where you're playing one sport year-round from the time you're basically old enough to walk. What's your opinion on specializing as opposed to playing multiple sports?
I definitely think in some certain sports it's definitely necessary, like we just talked about before. Lacrosse season almost never ends. There's spring, summer, fall, winter lacrosse, and kids are playing all year round to get better. And you see kids up in this area getting offers from colleges because they're all big-time players. And along with the football season, there's only really one season to play. So with football being one of my top sports, I kind of saw it as an opportunity to try new sports. And with these new sports, really gives me a perspective on how to play the other sports with the best ability. And like I said before, each sport kind of contributes to the whole athletic ability. And so, for example, football contributes to lacrosse a lot because of that physicality aspect. And basketball contributes to lacrosse a lot because of that one-on-one defense or those healthy defensive packages. So I think definitely it's important for some sports, but I always love playing multiple sports because it gave me a perspective on every other sport, on how to play it better and how to see the field better and just give me an advantage on the field as a whole. So
it's interesting to think of it too. Akeem Olajuwon, when he was the center for the Rockets in the 90s and leading them to multiple NBA championships, people talked about his soccer experience as a youth in Nigeria. Sam Darnold, when he was going through the NFL draft more recently, they were talking more about the fact that he wasn't going to the quarterback combines in high school, that he was a point guard on the basketball team and a pitcher on the baseball team, and the court vision contributed to his ability to see the field as a quarterback. So it's fun to hear that. And not to mention, it's fun to go out and play sports.
Yeah, and exactly. Then, as we're talking about being well-rounded with these different sports that help you play the different sports, in football, as you look ahead to the fall, you don't specialize because you're a standout performer in football on both offense and defense. So we're curious, because we've seen some of your highlights, what's your favorite position to play and what do you think is your best position on the football field?
Well, I mean, first off, I play running back on offense and linebacker on defense. And what's interesting about those two positions is that they're almost opposite positions, meaning that they're the same position relative to the side of the ball. Usually linebackers and running backs match up to each other, so that's why I have the opportunity to play both. But what's great about them is that for each position, when I'm on one side of the ball, I almost get a perspective on how the other team is going to run from that position because I do actually play both. So if I'm at linebacker and the running back is running a certain play, I almost know what they're going to do because I play that same position. So those instincts coming from both those positions definitely give me an advantage on the field and help me see both perspectives from offense and defense as a whole.
Yeah, that intellectual advantage is huge, and I'm sure it's playing out for you now, and it will in the future. And as you look ahead to possibly playing football in college, how do you think that might play out, whether you end up in the backfield or as a linebacker?
Yeah, I mean, today we obviously see guys playing one position. It's very rare unless you're an outstanding athlete to be able to play on both sides of the ball. So, I mean, obviously a linebacker, I love the contact and the leadership on defense. And obviously running the ball, running back is very fun too. So it'll be a tough decision, but whenever I get the opportunity to play in the future, if I get the opportunity to play college football, it'll be a great experience. So whatever side of the ball gives them the best opportunity to succeed. I'll greatly appreciate that.
It's an awesome attitude. Now, along with our two-time guest, Maddie Lucantoni, you were selected, and we touched upon this, to go to a leadership seminar at the Mount Washington Resort. You talked about getting to know players on other teams, other schools. What were some of the other valuable aspects of going up there for that conference?
Yeah, one of the biggest things that I think was valuable was that our school, Mr. Parker, he selected two kids, me and Maddie, and two other kids were on the actual committee, A.J. Pagliarulo and Kate Pemberton. So we were one of the smaller groups for the size of our town, because a lot of the other schools had about 4 to 8 kids per school, so a lot of them knew each other. But it was a great opportunity to meet new kids and just see that perspective of them not being on the field. Because obviously when you're on the field and you're playing another school or another town, you're always trying to beat them or they're trying to beat you. So it's very competitive, you know, usually like those people. But with the opportunity to see them in that same environment with the Mount Washington Hotel, it was great to see the student leader side of them and just be able to get to know them as an actual person. And one of the biggest aspects of that trip, I think, that I took away was the team bonding activities and being able to be on a team to create a certain task or succeed as a certain task as a group. So being able to meet those people with a different perspective of not just athletes, but student leaders as well, was a great opportunity. And I actually made a lot of friends in the conference. So it was definitely a great experience.
Sounds like a lot of fun. Now, in all the seasons you've played sports, and there have been a ton there, like in dog years now, what's been the most fun you've ever had?
Oh, that's definitely a tough question. But I'd say going way back to about 5th or 6th grade, we had our football team coming from the Bedford Junior Bulldogs. We had 2 great seasons. We were both undefeated, and I was still a young player at the time because it was obviously 5th and 6th grade. But both those years, we actually had an opportunity to compete for the regional championship and make it to nationals. It was out of all teams in New England, and we actually fell short twice. It was just a great experience to be on that team and be a part of that competitiveness, because you got to see teams outside of New Hampshire and outside of the state that you always play in. A lot of the kids on that team are still my great friends today that play on the high school team or play other sports with me. So it was definitely a great experience. And coming back to my high school years, I'd say that definitely freshman year was a lot of fun. We actually won the freshman football state championship, the freshman basketball state championship, and freshman year, I got the opportunity to play varsity lacrosse with my older brother. He was a senior, so that was definitely a special experience. And obviously, sophomore year, we won the 2016 state championship for football. So there's been a lot of very, very fortunate and successful opportunities for me to be an athlete on a lot of these great teams, these great coaches and great kids. So this has definitely been a special experience.
Well, we appreciate you taking time to share some of those experiences with us today, Ryan. You did great.
Thank you.
It's always fun to hear the perspective from kids who are actually in the middle of it, like I said, and the perspective that you shared with us today certainly is helpful for us as we continue to talk about what we see on the field. So, thank you again to our guest, Ryan Toscano, multi-sport student athlete. I always forget the student part, but Ryan emphasized
Ryan doesn't.
Ryan doesn't, yes. So, Ryan, thank you again. We appreciate it.
Thank you guys so much for having me. I had a great time.
Awesome. That we will be right back after this. You're listening to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Welcome back to Hanson's least favorite segment of Fox on Sports.
What's that?
It's the last segment.
It's right on.
Because that means he's done with the week. So, yeah, a lot of stuff going on in the world of sports. We're going to try to get it all done in the next 10 minutes because we had a couple solid interviews with Bob Luby from the Bedford Tennis Program and Ryan Toscano from Bedford Lacrosse, football, academics, basketball.
Leadership.
Yeah, seriously. Every time we talk to one of these kids, I have no concept of how they're able to do all this stuff and the college recruiting and the videos and all the things that really have to go into that, it just blows my mind. So, and still take the time out to talk to us in the middle of a school day.
Yeah, really impressive stuff. And it's been a fun week, locally and nationally. Let's start with on the court on Monday, because it was the first game of the showdown between the Warriors and the Rockets, which everybody's been looking forward to for months and months.
Yes.
And here is the little description about what happened in Game 1 in Houston. 5-0 Harden. Warriors lay down the law. Green pushing action. Supreme court spacing. Houston gambles with Harden. Durant makes him pay. Open in desert. Clay bets against West defense. Cashes verdict 3. And you may have heard some terminology in there, Lauren, that applies to what happened off the court on Monday.
Yes.
And of course, that was the Supreme Court ruling, which said that the law in New Jersey, where they are trying to legalize sports gambling like they already have in Las Vegas, Nevada, it should be allowed. It's unconstitutional to prohibit the states from doing what has been happening for decades in Nevada. It's kind of a big deal.
I think it's immoral and unconstitutional that they didn't allow it to happen before. Like, seriously, what's the harm?
Well, that's what the Supreme Court justices agreed to, 6 of them. The verdict was 6-3, 6 in favor of the one of those arguments that we like to make as normal citizens walking around. Well, that's unconstitutional. Well, it turns out that's what it was. And if you want to get a description of the details from the legal perspective, you can check out the article on SI.com by Michael McCann, who is the sports lawyer, and he's at the UNH Law School right here in Concord, and we're hoping to have him on the next couple of weeks to talk about this along with some other exciting legal stuff. But he's really an expert in this field, and he breaks it down so that it's really common sense. And the two biggest takeaways from the ruling, sort of legally, are that if the federal government wants to regulate something and pass a law, they can do it. But if they don't, then you have to let the states do what they want to do. Otherwise, it's called commandeering. And so it's unconstitutional for the federal government to say, New Jersey, you can't do that, if they're not going to regulate in that area of commerce. The other one is just about fairness. And New Jersey says these other 4 states got grandfathered in before this federal law, PASPA, you know, tried to forbid states from authorizing sports betting. And New Jersey said, you know, it's not fair. It's called the equal sovereignty doctrine. They said, if those guys can do it, we should be able to do it. So those are the two arguments that won the day in the Supreme Court. And it's going to change the landscape of sports forever in the U.S.
I don't know that it changes all that much. It makes it so we all kind of have a stake in what we're watching, and you don't have to go through any illicit means to gamble. But I handicapped for years, wrote predictions on who I thought was going to cover and why, and what the totals were, and lived and died with UTEP and Tulsa and a final basket of a game, or good beats and bad beats, or you name it. There are far more bad ones than there are good ones. So legal or illegal, don't tell me that all these people were only gambling in 4 states. Like, there were people gambling other places. It's just a matter of now you can do it more readily. There, of course, years ago in the wild, wild west of the internet, there were the Carib sports and the online sports betting in the world. And you could do that then and throw down your money on prop bets, which are about as likely to come in as me being voted Mr. Universe. But it's just the fun of watching it and going, huh, I wonder what happens if there's an onside kick to start off the Super Bowl. That pays 10,000 to 1. Let's do it. Or what happens if Tiger Woods gets an eagle and while standing on his head? It's people were doing it anyway. And that's the other thing, too, is I don't think it changes the landscape, because the internet has kind of opened things up anyway.
Well, you're right. From that perspective, a lot of gambling on sports was already taking place, both legally and illegally. So from that perspective, it might not change a lot for a lot of people. But there are ways that it's going to affect the business of sports and,
yes,
you know, how we consume sports. Mark Cuban has predicted that every professional franchise is going to automatically double in value. And
wouldn't surprise me.
What we don't know is exactly how it's going to play out, you know, in the stadiums. Are there going to be opportunities for people to, you know, place wagers in the stadium on what's happening during the game on a certain play? You know, not just who's going to win and by how much, but, you know, is Tiger Woods going to make this eagle? Because he's standing on his head right now. So if you want to, go for 10,000 to one,
right,
you can if you want.
And it's gonna, and it's like, really like a horse race, basically. It's interesting. You've seen The Natural. We all have, or at least most of us. Roy Hobbs has that scene where Gus comes up to him and starts talking about the team's hot, but he lost money because he bet against Roy,
right,
specifically Roy. And then the question becomes, how granular does that become, particularly when people have access to players? What opportunities do you have to throw things one way or the other way? Who know? It doesn't matter whether it's there or anywhere else. Any of that stuff could happen. Ultimately, you're just going to rely on people's integrity anyway. So it'll be interesting. It'll be a lot of fun. I think it will be a bit of a renaissance for people actually going to games. And you look at kind of a random Major League Baseball game, you turn on a day game that's taking place today on a Thursday, the Reds and the Pirates, and you might see 10,000 people there. Well, now you have a different reason to go. And it's not revolving solely around the draw of baseball. There's also a draw of I go because I have skin in the game. And that's fun.
Yeah, it can take a small segment of a game and make it much more impactful. And your interest can be hinging more and more on every pitch or every at bat, sort of like you have in the playoffs. And the, you know, the interest is always higher for a game like baseball in the playoffs because it's such a long season. Games are so long, and once you get to September and October, every pitch matters. Well, this is a way that every pitch in the dog days of August could matter at a Cincinnati Reds game when there's only 10,000 fans.
Right. So, thinking about some of that stuff, and we had talked about The Natural briefly. If you Google it, you can actually see Bill Simmons projected Roy Hobbs' stats like 15 years ago. He went through and figured this out, that Roy Hobbs would have hit 350 with an OPS of 1.197 based on playing roughly 115 games.
Well, the takeaway is don't bet against Roy Hobbs.
No. And then that takes you to Roy Hobbs is often compared to Ted Williams for obvious reasons, the quotes, the number on his back. But at that point in time, he was compared to Barry Bonds, who we compared to
Grant Levine.
Grant Levine. And we have had the opportunity to watch a lot of Grant, the Bedford High team, in the game that we did last Friday, the 11th of May, won 6-3 over Londonderry. They followed that up with an 11-1 win over Merrimack, a 13-0 win over Nashua South. I happened to be somewhere the other day and saw a picture of the 2012 state championship team. And
this is the Bedford Little League state championship
team. Bedford Little League state championship team. And it goes back to what Ryan Toscano was talking about with us earlier, when it's really fun and when you have the great opportunities that you have. But the names that you see on that team who are still part of this team, Ryan Lee, Joey Barrett, Grant Levine, Timmy Saltzman,
Nick Mokas,
Peyton Murray, Nick Mokas. It's you realize that these kids are out there now and they're having a great time playing, but there's a lot of history that goes for all of these guys throughout the years. And really for them, they've been playing together since what, kindergarten, first grade, or playing against each other in some way, shape, or form, maybe with a break here or there. But for them, a lot of those guys, this is the last ride.
Yeah, but, you know, those teams, they matter. And what Ryan was talking about is huge. Not only getting the experience of winning a championship at that age or competing in the regionals or the nationals, but also doing it with the same teammates. And that can really contribute to a quest for a championship at the high school level. And for some players, that will be their final athletic quest for a championship, but for some, they'll go on and do more in college. And but those experiences that you saw in that picture of that 12-year-old Little League team, they influence the quest for the championship now and leadership and, you know, reaching the top levels of competition throughout an individual's life.
Well, and also, you and I are watching a lot of this in a vacuum, or largely in a vacuum. Like, I, of course, remember the 2012 team, but wasn't intimately involved with the names on the team. And until I saw the picture the other day, some of those hadn't occurred to me. You knew that there was Grant Levine because Kevin was coaching. But remembering all of the guys that were a part of that team, you get to a point where you realize who's who, and you see kind of some of the things that take place, even on the basketball court. Nick Mokas, late in the game, going up, putting his arm around, or right after the game ended, putting his arm around Max Chartier and saying, hey, it's okay, buddy. That wasn't based on this last time. That was based on years and years of basketball and years of just kind of being through it with each other.
Competitions and teamwork. And
yeah, so it's a lot of fun. If you have the opportunity, I would recommend get out and watch some of these teams, just because these guys they've put in a lot of years. So say right near the end of the year, it's, you know, a bit of a sentimental time for them. So with that said, we're probably over our time, and Harry's probably not going to be too happy with us, but wanted to thank Harry Kozlowski and the rest of the crew at Bedford 105.1. Of course, Bill Jennings, Colleen Richardson, and Chris Gentry. Thank you to our guest, Bob Luby, from the Bedford High Tennis Program, and Ryan Toscano of the Bedford High Athletic Program. I'm not going to specify any further. Anything you want to add before we close it up?
No, go both, check out the playoffs.
We both picked the conference final spot on.
We did.
Yeah.
Yep. And so, we'll have the baseball playoffs on May 31st, first round. So stay tuned for that.
So with that said, another week of Fox on Sports is in the books. We will catch you next week. Thank you for listening to Bedford 105.1.